Welcome to Meet the Writers. I'm Georgina Godwin. My guest today is an award-winning author, poet, musician and critic. He was born in Calcutta and grew up in Bombay. He's been awarded the Commonwealth Literature Prize and the Los Angeles Times Book Prize, among others. He's a fellow of the Royal Society of Literature and professor of contemporary literature at the University of East Anglia. He's contributed fiction, poetry and reviews to numerous publications, including The Guardian, The London Review of Books, The Times Literary Supplement, The New Yorker and Granta. Amit lives in Calcutta, Oxford and Norwich. He's written seven novels, the latest of which is Friend of My Youth, which isn't a novel in the usual sense of the term, but we'll get on to that. Amit Chowdhury. Welcome to Meet the Writers.
Thank you.
Now, I have to start by asking, who is Amit Chowdhury? Because, of course, in your book, there is a character called Amit Chowdhury who isn't really Amit Chowdhury. What we're after here is who you, the person sitting opposite me, is. Now, I know that you were born in Calcutta and then moved to Bombay, and that seemed to have had a very big effect on your life.
Well, I was too sort of young to kind of register anything about the move. But growing up, I know that I wasn't happy in Bombay. And I wasn't happy at school at all. So Bombay is a kind of register of unhappiness for me. And also growing up in tall buildings, so mainly on the 12th story of a building in Malabar Hill. And then later on, after my father became the chief executive of the company he worked for, to the 25th story, as if, you know, that you had to ascend up in the building you were living in as you sort of went up in the job you were doing. So those kind of habitations and the kind of panoramic views, I think made me unhappy. Mm. And I used to love going to Calcutta and staying in my uncle's house, which was a three-story or two-storied house, looking out onto a lane and other two-storied houses. So when my father actually moved after retirement to Bandra to an apartment on the second or third story, I was in England at the time, but I used to love visiting that lane. So yeah, I would say that I was not very happy in Bombay. Bombay itself was energized, I think, and changed and transformed by something I feel very ambivalent towards: globalization, the advent of the free market economy everywhere in the world, economic deregulation in India in 1991, by which time my parents had left Bombay. They mm-hmm. left it in 1989. And I began to encounter this transformed city, just in the way London was transformed, I think, in the 90s, by the same set of factors. I began to encounter it over the 90s and in the 2000s and was quite sort of taken with it. It seemed to have suddenly changed into what Calcutta used to be, that is, the one great Indian city of the present. But then again, of course, I was also gradually beginning to encounter my past, the past which I had not sort of really been attached to because I had been unhappy in that past. I began to encounter it again in a new way in this city which was newly energized, the remnants of another kind of life, of my parents' life, of that past. And the other thing I began to encounter was different parts of the city which I'd never been to before, because the globalized city, the transformed city, was interconnected in a way which it hadn't been before.
I'm very interested in the society, the space that you and your family occupied. You have in your latest book, you quote Noam Chomsky saying, "No one parties as much as the Indian upper classes." Mm. And I've heard you talk before about how English-speaking Indians are separate, how there is a definite divide, almost a sort of snobbishness.
Yes, but this is true of the Bombay in which I grew up. And Chomsky is speaking about in India after economic deregulation. He wouldn't have said this if he had been visiting India in the 70s, where we had an ethos of, I would say, voluntary Nehruvian or Gandhian austerity, mm-hmm. and where, like everywhere else in the world, to be middle class could be a thing to be proud of. And I would say even my parents, although my father worked right top level of that kind of life, because of the restrictions of the Nehruvian and then the Indira Gandhi's regime, where 80% of your income was taxed, the life you led was one of outward privilege in the sense that they got something that was called perks in the company. But my father knew very clearly that he didn't actually own any of these things, that they would have to move out and that they weren't getting much money in the bank. So, you know, what we are looking at after 91 is a completely different sort of world in which people were suddenly making a lot of money. Now, this is something my father never experienced because he retired in 1984, 85. So we inhabited this particular kind of space, but we never actually partook of the benefits of full-blown capitalism in India.
You moved to London and your first book came out in 1991, A Strange and Sublime Address. Now, I know that you've also written about a young Indian student in London in Odysseus Abroad. And I wonder, firstly, where that impetus to write came from and if it was poetry or prose for you at first. Because I have to say, reading your work, it seems to me that they both come together. It's almost impossible, actually, to divide. Your prose is so poetic.
I think the impulse for me to write was dominated by a love for poetry and trying to write poetry. And that's what I did for a long time. And I had a long apprentice period as a poet, as a person who wanted to write poetry. And I think I also discovered the fact that I wanted to write about places, balconies, lanes as a poet, before I turned to prose.
All of those things that had influenced you as a child.
Yeah, all of those things which I missed in Bombay as a child and which I loved in Calcutta and which I discovered in the Bombay of Bandra, which when I was growing up was the outskirts of Bombay, and which my father moved to in the early 80s. All of that I began to write about first in poetry. That's where I discovered my subject matter in terms of wanting to write about, as I said, lanes, balconies, looking out on the street.
Which you must have found here in Britain too.
I found it here in Britain, but in the London that I was an undergraduate in, I was intimidated by the silence. And this is something that I was grateful not to have to deal with in India. In fact, the opposite of that, of having sound around me all the time, it was something that formed me, I think, as a writer. And I became more aware of that again later on, maybe in England, where I had to deal at that time. So this London, again, is very different from the London of today. Sundays were very different then. So having to deal with Sundays, having to deal with silence, all of this made me aware how important the open window in India was. The balcony was. I mean, there were hardly any balconies in the houses that I lived in London. So that intermediate kind of space, which is neither inside nor outside, has always been important to me, the balcony, I mean. But I did discover that looking out onto the street or onto other houses, glimpsing other lives, was more interesting to me than looking out at the sea, which is what I did a lot of when I was growing up in the 12-storey apartment in Malabar Hill.
You talk about sound, and of course I know that music is very important to you. You compose as well as play. Tell me about that side of your life.
I'm a singer, but I also compose. I suppose I play a bit of guitar like everybody does. But I sort of grew up listening to, you know, rock music. I think my parents bought a hi-fi system, as they used to be called, in around 1969 or 70. And we got complimentary records from the shop. One of them was The Best of the Who. So I got into that kind of stuff, which there was a lot of in Bombay. And Bombay was a place of, you know, I mean, if you have only to listen to Hindi film music from the 50s and 60s to see how quickly, even before the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, they came up with a genuinely amazing hybrid sound. So I grew up with that. And around the age of 12, I graduated from air guitar to actual real guitar. And then I also began to want to become a Canadian singer-songwriter at a certain point in my life.
What is it that makes Canadian singer-songwriters different from
Joni Mitchell, Neil Young, Leonard Cohen, James Taylor. Joni Mitchell and Neil Young were quite important to me, especially. Joni Mitchell. And then I rediscovered her later. She continues to be very, very important to me. But at the age of 16, I began to hear Indian classical vocalists singing. And Bombay was a hub for Indian classical music. And I used to hear them on the radio, on television, and I got very drawn to that music. And my mother also began to learn. She was a great singer, but she began to learn devotional songs from this amazing classical singer, a very young man, whom I began to learn from. That took me into Indian classical music. And then there was a long period when I was in England and later when I just stopped listening to Western music altogether. Mainly because James Taylor had disappeared and had been replaced by Duran Duran and Frankie Goes to Hollywood. But also because I was so much into Indian classical music.
Because you wrote a book about it, Afternoon Rag, 1993.
Afternoon Rag has music in it. So does The Immortals, my fifth novel. Yeah.
And The Immortals, in fact, talks about a woman who sounds perhaps a little like your mother.
Yeah. So she's a bit like my mother, but she's also not like my mother in many ways, in the sense that my mother has had many, many records. This woman spends her life without cutting a single record. So there are other differences too. So there are qualities of my mother in her. Mm. And that takes me back to, I think, your earlier question about, you know, the difference between me and the Amit Chowdhury in the novel. They both converge, actually. I mean, on one level, nothing in the novel, Friend of My Youth, actually happened in the way I describe it. I mean, that, you know, I never actually went to do a reading from The Immortals at that time in the March of 2011. All of that is kind of invention. But things similar to that happened. Mm. And there are convergences in these two lives between the Amit Chowdhury in the book and myself.
In Friend of My Youth, the character Amit Chowdhury goes back to Bombay. Mm. I love the fact that you're there for The Immortals, but it can't be found within the Taj.
Yeah.
And you say the Taj is to be found in The Immortals. The Immortals is not to be found in the Taj.
Yeah.
I think that's a fantastic line. Of course, the Taj is very, very important because that was the scene of the terror attack in Bombay, one of the scenes in 2008, which is something that kind of peripherally takes place. It's a device for you to be able to talk about the city being utterly changed, a facade, something that's there but that's not there, that's half glimpsed and maybe not real.
Yeah, it's a way for me to speak about and also come to terms with the fact of disorientation, about the fact that the city looks the same but has changed completely. Just like the Taj in this novel, when it's revisited, looks exactly the same because they've restored most of it, nearly all of it. But one knows that what one is seeing is an illusion, that it was all destroyed. So what is it that one is seeing now? There is, of course, a metaphor, which I have not mentioned in the book, but which was on my mind for other reasons, of the ship of Theseus, which was dismantled and then built again, bit by bit. And the question was, is this the same ship? And the same kind of thing occurs to you about the Taj or Bombay. Is it the same place?
We talked at the beginning about this not being a novel. It's not a memoir because it's not you, although it's very similar to you. It's not autobiographical. I believe that you have reinvented what the novel means here. And I wonder if you have a name for this form. I think The Guardian called it the auto-novel.
John Day in The Guardian was referring to this kind of genre called autofiction, where you have a character who has the same name as the author. I'm uninterested in those exercises. But all the reviewers in the UK have pointed out, and this is something I was nervous about, and I'm thankful that they say this, is that it's very easy for such a book to be mistaken as a postmodern novel or a Paul Auster novel, in which there's somebody called Paul Auster. And they say that, no, this doesn't, however, add up to a postmodern novel. It's not self-conscious in that way. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been sort of trying to work with the novel. I don't know if this will make any sense, not in terms of story or narrative, but in terms of creating a particular kind of space. Mm. And a space in which things which are everyday are transformed. And this takes me back to your earlier question about poetry. Are you right? Is this a novel? Is this prose or is it poetry? And I think there is for me a connection there with poetry as a form to what I'm doing here in this novel and in other novels. And I'd say that doesn't only have to do with the kind of language you're using or whether the language is poetic or not. Mm-hmm. It has to do with the experience of reading. So I think the novel is the conventional novel, which is a generalization, but, you know, I think the novel, as we think of, you know, what is a novel, is something that gives us a span of time and it gives us a series of events which might sort of compose a week or a month or even a lifetime.
And a beginning, a middle and an end.
A beginning, a middle and an end. It might be non-linear, but it will give us the sense of inhabiting this time passing and following the characters through what the passage of time does to the characters. So we will have a kind of information about what happens to these lives and to these characters that we didn't have when we started the novel. And also we will have kind of satisfied a desire in us to have this information about what happens to people's lives over time. When you start reading a poem and then you finish reading the poem, I don't think you have any additional information in addition to what you had when you began reading the poem. However, something has changed. There is a transformation within yourself. Reading the poem, you have been transformed in some way. You can immediately start reading the poem again and then go through that kind of experience of transformation again without necessarily having any additional information, anything in addition to what you had earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And this, I think, is different from reading narrative. And having finished reading a narrative, you are not necessarily going to want to start reading the narrative again. You have satisfied that kind of urge to find out about what happened to that life. With the poem, you don't know what it is that you've learned, but something has happened. You can revisit it immediately and go through that experience again without, again, necessarily learned anything. For me, the kind of books I write are not meant to give you something which you've learned in addition to what you knew earlier. They give you a period of transformation. So I think over here as well, in this book, I'm looking at a period, both for me and the writer and the reader, where things are transformed. So in that sense, it is not strictly speaking a novel in the sense that we conventionally understand that term.
And it only takes place over a day and a half. And in fact, one of the main characters is missing for most of that time.
Yeah.
And I thought it was very interesting. So Ramu, who is your oldest school friend, who is missing because he's a drug addict, he's gone into rehab. You talk about old friends and how they're only really important when they're not there.
Yeah. So for the first two-thirds of the book, the narrative is only about this reading that's going to happen.
Which we never hear about.
Which we don't hear about. And the fact that as he waits for the reading to happen the next day or that particular day, he's preoccupied with other things, which include the fact that he now is staying in a room in a club overlooking the building in which he grew up, and the fact that he has no home in Bombay. He's preoccupied with the fact that the Taj, which he visits with some shoes to exchange for his mother, is an illusion of continuity. And he's preoccupied with the fact that this unsettling impact that the absence of his childhood friend is having on him, something which he didn't expect because the friend is in rehab, and then he finds himself unable to access this friend. So this kind of ties up with this whole idea of who is Amit Chaudhary? Who is Amit Chaudhary the writer? And what else are we keeping out and what can we let in? I mean, even here today, you ask me, what is the connection between Amit Chaudhary in the novel and you? But when you say you, you're already looking at a kind of very curtailed version of me sitting here in this studio. Just some time ago, I was walking around Baker Street before coming here. And I was thinking, my parents were here with me several times when I was a student. And we went once because I needed a TV to live in London. We went to Radio Rentals on Baker Street. And those ghosts were returning to me from the past. Mm. Both my parents are dead. This is the you you're not taking into account when you ask me, is it you? So that's what I'm trying to open up in the novel. What is this you? What is this person? Who is this person?
Mm. Amit Chaudhary, the writer, as you write in the book, you say, writing is a business. I'm here on business. That's why you go back to Bombay. And you later talk, there's an interview with a journalist that takes place in the book. And you talk about, as a writer, really having to give your pound of flesh and how how much hard work it is. And I wonder how much all of this stuff, being here, talking to me, doing all of this, actually impedes on you as a writer. Does it transform you? But also, does it stop you from being the most productive Amit Chaudhary that you could be?
I'm not sure. I mean, the simple answer would be to be able to talk to you allows me to clarify various things. It allows me to take part in this whole setup which we have nowadays to do with promoting your stuff, whether it's during readings or literary festivals, is something that alienates me, as the book would have suggested. But it's also a chance to not just promote your book, but to introduce the set of values by which you write.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's important to do that in a world where the values are imposed on you. from outside and where everybody's supposed to be happy and in concordance with those values. So whether these are prizes or festivals, everybody's kind of in a state of happiness. So I would use these conversations as real conversations to talk about, you know, various things beyond the way you fit in to people's expectations.
Just before we go, obviously, I think this book is absolutely brilliant. It's a friend of my youth is undefinable, a genre that I've certainly not come across before. And I know you were talking about plot and that you just feel... I picked up what you were saying about needing a dynamic space. And that's really what this book gives us. It gives us the spaces in between, doesn't it?
Yeah, the spaces in between. Yeah, that's always what I've been interested in. Not the space of the event or what we understand to be the event. So therefore, there's no, as you said, the reading never happens. He's there for a reading, but the reading is never described. So the actual event doesn't happen. The friend also is absent for much of the book. So we're talking about periods of waiting and periods of drift and periods in between. As I said, like the balcony, which is between the house and the street, those kind of in-between spaces are really important to me, full of importance.
What's next for you? What's next through your window?
Well, I mean, the next thing that's scheduled to come out next year is a book of essays, critical essays, called The Origins of Dislike. And
do you include the novel in there, by the way? It's clear you dislike plot in the novel.
Yeah. I'm sure I have sort of attacked various forms of completeness. The Origins of Dislike is an attack on the Renaissance painting, being a kind of form of overproduction of completeness. It's connected to my dislike of the novel when it becomes that, especially in the historical novel. There are other things I talk about in that book. And also a book on music, which I am going to start writing soon.
With Joni Mitchell in it?
Hopefully. I've written an essay on Joni Mitchell. I don't know if she'll go in there. I want to write a whole short book on Joni Mitchell. Yeah. But that's a different book.
That's a completely different book. Yeah. Amit Chowdhury, thank you so much for talking to me. I can't recommend this book highly enough. Friend of My Youth, named after and from Alice Munro.
Yes, as I say in the book, from an Alice Munro story which I never read.
Friend of My Youth is published by Faber and Faber. It's out now. You've been listening to Meet the Writers. Many thanks to George McDonough, David Stevens and Daphne Karnitsis. I'm Georgina Godwin. If you'd like to be in touch, it's gg@monocle.com. Thank you for listening.